Inasmuch as anything in dreams is real, I'm told that people we see and interact with when we're asleep are nothing more than extensions of ourself, facets of our own psyche commenting back on itself. A self-referential, recursive loop fashioned of a strip torn from our own unconscious mind. And I can't help but wonder if that's true of my dreams. Then what of my writing? What of the characters I create? Who is speaking the dialogues and having the arguments? Who is carrying on the affairs and waging the wars? What of the demons I call up and those I exorcise? What of the gods that I invoke? Which way does that door swing? Which way is inward? And which way leads out? Which is the reflection and which is the image? Which is the voice and which is the ear? Who is the creator? Who is the vessel? And who is that which it contains? And most importantly, whose hands hold it up to be filled? Back almost 20 years. I was walking through a field one autumn afternoon in Southern California with a friend of mine, a film director and art student, guy I went to college with, and we were walking along on a lower disused part of campus through this field, and there was this box in the middle of the field. I want you to imagine something about the size and shape of a refrigerator, about that big around, about that tall, standing up on rusted metal legs. The sides and back of this thing are made out of cinder blocks, and the front of it is two thick doors with a rusty iron latch on it. My friend and I are walking past, and I say, what is that? And he tells me that it's an old abandoned kiln that the art department used to use to bake pottery. And he grabs the latch and breaks the seal on the rust, flakes everywhere as he squeals open the doors, and inside there's nothing but dust and dried bits of dirt and scrub, spiderweb in the corner long abandoned. And it's a hot day. There's scrub grass growing in the field all around us, creeping up the legs of the kiln. You can hear the insects buzzing underneath it all. And my friend says, you ought to write something about this. You ought to write a film script for me to direct, something about a guy locked in this box. And I do what I do with everything that people tell me I ought to write about. I file it away, and I don't really have any intention of doing anything with it, even though he's a good friend of mine, and I kind of want to impress him. And looking back on it, I don't know what he was expecting. He probably wanted a film script, a movie, something about a guy, and he gets stuck in this box, and people have a reason to put him there, and he tries to escape, and something interesting happens, and there's some action, and clever things occur. That isn't what I wrote when I went back home that night, and what ended up coming out was filtered through God knows how many layers of Samuel Beckett plays, and T.S. Eliot's poetry, and strata after strata of personal mythology. But it was a film script. It's about a guy in a box. And probably the only other thing I can say about it is that it's called Polyandrium. Scene 1. A muddled view, shadow and darkness. There is the sound of breathing and a rougher sound of something scraping. A bare foot pushes into the frame, a single green leaf stuck to the sole. We move up the leg, tracing across the twisted, naked body of a man. His skin is scraped in places and somewhat grimy. His body is squashed, twisted upon itself. We move up and down his arms and legs, tracing the veins and muscles, moving over the map of his form. Stopping for a moment on his stomach, we watch it swell and contract with his labored breathing. Set into one wall is a large metal door. The latch is visible, but there is no handle on this side. We return to the man, coming to rest on his hand splayed out against the rough bricks. As he speaks, we explore the small space that he is confined in. We are inside a large box, perhaps 6 feet tall by 4 feet deep. The sides of the box are made of pale cinder blocks stained with yellow and age. Small cracks here and there let in feeble daylight from outside. There are cobwebs stretched across the corners. Scattered across the floor of the box are a number of dull-colored shards, broken pottery. The hate comes to me in the darkness. Never fear. When I was a child, and the light was put out for the evening, I would lie there, unafraid. I was never afraid of the dark like most children my age would have been. It didn't seem to matter, being afraid. No matter how long I would lie there, shadows that crept and played at the corners of my eyes flowed over me, eventually dragging me into the dead world, the graveyard, the bone orchard. The bone orchard. Maybe that's too old-fashioned a phrase. My grandfather was cremated. They burned him when he died because he was terrified of a premature burial. That's what they told me, at least. All of his life he had lived in fear. He would dream every night that he was under the ground, in a box, with no air, scrabbling at the lid, pushing back the dirt, feeling the grit slowly seep into his eyes. Once, trying to dig his way out of a dream, he struck my grandmother in his sleep, breaking her jaw. I remember him as a quiet, restful man. I don't know how to reconcile those memories with the stories they've told me. She was a quiet woman, with wispy webs for hair, and a strange set to her mouth when she smiled. I don't want you to think bad of him. It wasn't as if he did it on purpose. So, they burned him. I know it's morbid, but I wonder if he was dead when they did it. Or did he wake up when the fire hit him? Did he feel the heat and struggle against the flames that rose up burning through him, burning him to a handful or two of dry ashes that my father would spread over a patch of land, murmuring, while my mother wiped away tears and I wiped away a bit of grit that blew into the corner of my eye? They didn't keep him in a vase on the coffee table to be put away in a cupboard when guests came over. I'm glad for that. That says something about my parents, I think. My father's hands looked like they were carved from marble or ivory, shot through with pale cobalt veins. His palms were dusted with soft gray ash when he finished. He stood there. He didn't have anywhere to wipe them off, so he just walked back to the car with them held out from his body and got a Kleenex from the glove compartment. He turns his hands over, examining the grime, flexing them against the feeble light. My mother never made me wash my hands before supper. I've often wondered why. Not even when we had company and I had to look my best, but when I was at someone else's house? As a guest, always be on your best behavior. She could find significance in the smallest things. Someone's name, a picture, a piece of music. She noticed the way things were fashioned, woven by the fates. Everything was tidy, wrapped up, fitting together. She died screaming, in a hospital bed burning with fever and pain. It was warm, autumn, Indian summer. Her body was so slick with sweat that they couldn't hold her down to give her medication. Not that she would need it, but how would they know? She was a neat, clean woman with a certain amount of personal style. All of that was lost when I saw her sitting up in bed screaming, her body stretched taut, full of blackened growths, wild eyes, like someone possessed. You hope things won't end that way. There are certain things we shouldn't have to watch. We should be able to choose one thing to forget. A priest sat next to her bed reading a paperback book, waiting for his cue. Last rites. All through the screaming and pain, he never once looked up, never said a word. He sat there with his lips pursed, half grinning over Pulp Fiction's excesses. He looked up when she was finally silent and spoke, with that bemusement still lingering at the edge of his lips. Depart, O Christian soul, out of this world. In the name of God, the Father Almighty, who created you, in the name of Jesus Christ, who redeemed you, in the name of the Holy Spirit, who sanctifies you, may your rest be this day in peace, and your dwelling place in the paradise of God. And then he went back to his book. And that was that. They didn't burn her. My father wouldn't let them. He preferred to have her closed up in a box and stuff underground and left to rot. I suppose he wanted to keep his hands clean. I'm sure that if she had accidentally been put into the earth alive, she'd be dead by now. It was a long time ago. They didn't even ask me. I would have burned her. Burned away the black moss that was quietly growing within her, driving her insane. In olden times, they would have locked her up, cut out her brain, made her a zombie. In even older times, they would have boiled her in oil, put her in stocks, broken her on the rack, made her say the Lord's Prayer, and offered her a redemption, leading her away in pious compassion to the comfort of the stake, her eyes full of devils and her mouth full of flames. I don't know which I would prefer to remember. If I had the choice, the zombie or the demon. Scene 2. Looking through one of the cracks in the ceiling, a small peek at the moon outside, the man below staring up at it, back up again to the crack, passing through and out. The moon is obscured by clouds. Rain begins to fall in sporadic little drops, the soft, gentle rain that comes during a hot autumn. Follow a single drop as it lands outside on top of the box, slowly runs down inside over the bricks. Drop into this man's staring eye. He blinks, wiping it away from the corner of his eye. Rain is falling in earnest now, pummeling the outside of the box, hollow and deafening noise. Water runs through the cracks, dripping from the ceiling and running down the bricks. The man looks down and sees a small pool of water forming, a bleary reflection of his features. He lashes out, shattering the image, beating his hands in cadence to the rain. Scene 3. The man's closed eyes framed in a patch of sun pull back. A few small insects buzzing about his head move up to a crack in the wall above him where the light is coming through. Slowly, the crack is obscured. A a shadowy shape outside. A sharp little stick pokes through, darts forward, stabbing him lightly. He jerks up, yelps, cracking his head against the top, falling back. He rocks himself, watching the shadow move from crack to crack. The stick pokes through another, scratching his leg. He spins, grabbing at it too late. The shadow resumes its cruel orbit once again. The man watches. He jumps, cries out, turning. The stick withdraws once again. A small trickle of blood running down his arm. The shadow stops. The stick pokes through, searching. The man is ready, grabs the stick, pulling at it. A short struggle, he screams. The stick splinters, drawing back through his fingers, tearing the skin away. The shadow moves off and he is alone, staring, the blood pattering against the bricks. I'm sure I must have done something to deserve this, but I can't imagine what it might have been. I'm sorry for it, whatever it was. I'm not a murderer. I'm not a thief. I don't fuck animals or small children. I must have forgotten. A low scratching sound. A spider slowly crawls up through a crack between the bricks. His eyes fix on it. He freezes, watching. It slowly progresses to a corner. Make yourself at home. Though, I ought to ask you to move on. Metaphor should not be belabored. The spider slowly begins to fashion a small web in the corner. The man watches, sweat starting to form. The day moves on. The heat increases. Scene 4. The heat is rising, baking him. Sweat rolls off his shoulders, forming a crack glaze, running into his eyes, his scrapes, his teeth bared. A single fly slowly loops across the bare interior, lazily tracing through the heat. His hands are busy, assembling the shards of crockery back into their original shape, a small pot. He holds them together, fingers bracing them against each other. I've heard in Haiti that they seal up spirits in earthen pots, binding them with complicated spells. In the Middle Eastern countries and parts of Asia, an empty lamp or a jar is used. He looks around the box, searching for the missing piece. It is lying in the back corner, at the center of the spider's web. The fly is caught in the web, thrashing weakly. Spider darts out, wrapping the fly. In the Sudan, a person is selected from the tribe at random by the gods, and after the evil spirit is bound into them with a spell tattooed on their skin, they are driven out into the desert to perish. He blinks, knuckles the sweat from his eyes, watching the spider. He removes his hands from the pottery. It falls to pieces once again. Scene 5. The man, as before, staring at the web. A small breeze rustles from between the cracks, toying with the dried leaf in the corner, gently moving the web, weaving through the man's matted hair. He shivers. The wind increases, howling outside, a single spark. In the darkness. Slowly a glow builds, fire is lit beneath him, flames quickly leap up all around. He thrusts forward, screaming. The flames rise, blackening his flesh. There is a subtle shift. We see him lying, unharmed, every muscle tightened to extremes, eyes screwed shut, holding out the darkness. The demon stands still. Can you look for them in the corners and the out-of-the-way places? There is so much they have to do in this evil time. Will they stop long enough to be seen? In the dream, my house has been transformed into a filthy hole. I walk through the kitchen full of broken pots and crusty dishes. My father sits at the table, running bony fingers across a blank page, murmuring. My mother glides through the dusty rooms, roaring. I fall to my knees in horror and fear and sadness, and my father is there, putting his arms around me, holding me close, comforting me with words of prayer. I smear dusty hands across my face, and a low keening rises, building in sharp contrast to my father's muffled words. I fear the shattering, shrill wail ripped out of my chest, nearly screaming as my father cries out, "In the name of God, I cast out this demon!" Authority. All of my breath is lost as flatulent laughter, black and unholy, bubbles from between my lips. And then I woke up. Isn't that what I'm supposed to say? That I woke up? That it was all a dream? Isn't that how it's supposed to end? Scene 6. The man, staring into the web, full of small bundles, slowly the shadow passing behind him between the cracks. He does not see. A small, sharp stick slowly works its way in through a crack. Pausing, jabbing viciously, he bellows in pain, weeping with full-throated horror, his hand to his eye. Blood runs out between his fingers. The stick pokes in again. He screams, thrashing about, scraping the walls, pounding his head against the floor, clawing at the door, howling. The web is smashed and destroyed, pottery scattered. He struggles. The sharp stick slips in and out of cracks, goading him on. Follow the spider as it crawls away, drops out a hole, and escapes. The man still rages behind. Scene 7. The wall, crisscrossed by curious brown lines, strange symmetrical smears across the bricks, the man once again twisted and broken. Start on his bloody fingers, bone showing through the tips, a nail or two missing. Slowly work over his entire body, coming to rest on a single staring eye. He is writing on the walls with his fingertips. The bricks have worn them away, down to the bone. I have seen these pictures they take, pictures of people from the inside, full of dark masses and clots and growths. They tell me that these masses of darkness, these shadows, are our hearts and lungs and flesh. They say that these things are alive, small shadows living in the hollow places between our bones. I have seen these dark pictures, and I think, what lives inside of me? I have seen these shadows that people drag about inside themselves as they live and walk and play and fuck, and I say, where are mine? What shadows have tucked themselves away inside my lungs, among my bones, behind my brain, in my heart? They tell me they are there, but I do not see them when I look in the mirror. These shadows I carry inside, these dark masses wrapped around my bones, moving my feet, raising my arms, breathing foul, rank air into my lungs and propelling me through the world, doing their work. I go roaming about the earth and walking around on it, and I am not alone. The shadow moved throughout the entire world, wandering through the gardens and the arid places, searching for a home, a place to hang its hat, as it were. I was shown the shadow, introduced, a formal greeting in the darkness, an invitation was offered, a simple little bargain struck, and the shadow found a home. No more wandering through the empty lands, through the darkness. The shadow embraced me. Nuzzling darkness found my heart, caressing me in the dry heat, in the small minor corners of my heart. The shadow fed. wrapping it in darkness. There is no comfort in the darkness, no sleep in the shadow, no rest, no cool breeze, no rain, but dry, hollow hate that comes, drags me, dances me about, strings of darkness hanging off of my wrists and legs, pulling me along in its wake, a marionette to the shadow, a diversion, a joy for the darkness, a puppet that tumbles and chirps and dances a little jig or two, amusing the shadow. I serve the shadow inside, as do we all. He raises his head, a noise from outside, sliding, grating sound, metal on metal. Outside, two hands slowly draw back the locks. Inside, the man curled up. A shaft of light falls in, shattering against his sunken cheek. The door is opened. He blinks, teeth clenched, raises his bloody hands towards the light. Outside, his hands clamber out around the edges of the door. Pale spiders. Slowly, they pull the door closed again. Kinda hard to believe nobody wanted to make a movie of that, huh? Yeah, it's the feel-good comedy hit of the summer. Anyways, thanks very much for listening. That's our show for today. Got another one coming up right before Halloween. Like I said last year, my favorite time of year. Until then, thanks very much for listening. Take care of yourselves. Stop by the website at thegospelofthomasonline.com. Let me know what you think. Or you can read some of my other work or download copies of my books or even buy a copy of your very own if you want. Just go to tmcamp.com. Thanks again for listening. I'll talk to you soon. The Gospel of Thomas is a work of fiction. All situations, events, and characters are nothing more or less than products of the author's imagination. Well, not really. This whole thing is true. The entire show is recorded and broadcast from inside an old abandoned kiln in a field in Southern California. Please, won't someone come and let me out? The show is copyright 2010, TM Camp. and the Gospel of Thomas is produced and distributed by our own press. Despite this, please submit all inquiries, professional or otherwise, to the author via tmc@tmcamp.com. He's the one to blame. The Gospel of Thomas is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives License. All other rights reserved. Visit us online at www.thegospelofthomasonline.com.